This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today's show is a kind of time machine. Later, we meet two couples that you know very well, Ricky and Lucy, Fred and Ethel.
Every month, every single month, your bank account is overdrawn. Now, what is the reason?
You don't give me enough money?
I don't give you enough money!
Well, we both agree that must be the reason.
Well, tell me something, will you? How often is Ethel checking account overdrawn? Never. Never? How do you manage that?
It's easy. I never had enough money at one time to open a checking account.
What?
I Love Lucy ruled the airways in the 1950s and 60s, and it's still on the air every day somewhere in the world. It is also live on stage in Charlotte this month, and we meet the four most famous people in sitcoms later in the hour. But we start even further back in time than the 1950s. Ethan Uslan is a musician on a mission to bring back ragtime into the popular consciousness, and he's making a name for himself doing it. We first met Ethan on this program shortly after he arrived in town. He was playing for a string of silent movies, and having attended one of the films for which he played, I can tell you how wonderful that experience was. When A Prairie Home Companion came to town, Ethan got a guest shot. Now he's one of several pianists being featured in a documentary called The Entertainers, about ragtime pianists who converge annually on Peoria to compete in the World Championship Old Time Piano Playing Contest. Well, The Entertainer gets its Charlotte premiere, I think, next week, and Ethan joins us in the studio this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
He's seated behind our studio kawaii. We've rolled a piano in here this morning, so you'll be playing some of this music live for us. Remind us how you became, because you were on the show, a couple of years ago, remind us how you became interested in ragtime piano.
Well, I always liked it from what I heard. I wasn't exposed to it that much growing up, and I studied classical music mostly. But then I guess I discovered The Entertainer, The Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin, and I liked that a lot. And then I learned Rhapsody in Blue. And then the more I got exposed to, the more I wanted to find, and then it just kept snowballing and snowballing.
But if I understand this correctly, you are making a living doing this, right?
That's right.
Because there's not, it would seem to me there's not a lot of call for ragtime piano. I don't mean to be,
that's
trying to be a realist here.
That's not an exaggeration. That's true.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm fortunate. I was able to quit my day job several years ago, and I've been able to find enough gigs, knock wood.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that I discovered that there are a lot of people out there who like this music. A lot of them are AARP members from that demographic.
Yeah.
Great.
How can you not like? I listened to a bunch of your stuff again yesterday just to get into the mood for this conversation, and it puts a smile on your face. It makes you feel good. It really does. I mean, it's a pick-me-up.
Well, thank you, Mike. I agree, and I think a lot of people might not seek this kind of music. You know, the first thing they do in the morning might not be to Google ragtime, mm-hmm. but when people hear it, they like it, and if they get exposed to it somehow, they might come back for more.
I know that you went to a conservatory, right, and studied the classical music. At what point did you start playing? How old were you when you started playing ragtime?
Well, little bits here and there as a kid. So I didn't fully jump into it. About midway through college, maybe my sophomore year, I kind of had a breakdown. Because I was studying classical music, and it was at Indiana University, which is one of the biggest music schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying so hard, working on these Chopin etudes and practicing for months. And then I would see that other people would play them much better than me. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to play this music that I really like deep down inside.
But ragtime seems just as difficult. I mean, it's incredibly difficult with all the syncopation and the stride, left hand. And
well, I think it's a lot easier than the Chopin. But
really? Why?
I think because, I don't know, I guess it speaks to me and I feel more comfortable with it my tastes.
And is it because when you're playing Chopin, you have to conform to a certain expectation, whereas with ragtime, it's a little freer. If you hit a clinker or two, that's kind of part of the charm of it.
Exactly. I think ragtime, if you get a good beat going, and you know, you flub a phrase here and there, it's still, the musical experience is still great.
There's a young boy in this movie. I only saw the trailer. The movie wasn't given to us. So there's a young boy in this film, The Entertainer, that you're part of, which gets its Charlotte premiere August 18th in Tate Hall at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, who I think he must be still in high school.
No. No? He's in college. But when the film was made,
but he kind of unembarrassedly talked about how his musical tastes were out of sync with those of his friends, and I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll play a gig and I'm playing the kind of music I like, and then someone will say, "Okay, now play me the music you really like." And I say, "Actually, no, I like this kind of stuff."
You described this as a ragtime addiction. So when professors who were teaching you Chopin and Mozart and others heard you playing Jelly Roll Morton and Fats Waller, were they appalled? Did they encourage it? Did they like it? Did they appreciate it?
They appreciated it because, you know, your typical piano professor, they're teaching, you know, 15 piano lessons, you know, a day or so,
right?
You know, and they hear Chopin etudes all day long. They live in this world. And I think my piano professor in college appreciated it. And he confided to me, and now I'm confiding it to Charlotte, that that he doesn't really listen to classical music anymore and that he enjoyed my CD.
Now, you could have gone into jazz and played jazz piano, or cocktail piano, as some people might refer to it.
Do play that.
Do you play that?
Yeah, more into the 1940s style. Around 1950, things get a little modern for me.
Even Oscar Peterson and people like that?
I love Oscar Peterson, yeah. But to be able to play in all these different styles at a high level, you've got to invest a lot of time and energy. I can't do everything. You know.
Of course not. For a while, and I think you still do, you were accompanying movie screenings. And I had seen some silent movies, literally silent. No soundtrack, no music. They just screened the film, and you sat there and you watched the title cards come up for the dialogue, and you watched the movie. And then I went to the Children's Theater, and you were playing for a screening out there for a movie, and I think it was The Great Train Robbery, I think.
I think that opened up for The General.
The General, exactly right. And you played for that, and it was a revelation. I really got it.
Good, thank you.
I mean, not only was it a revelation about how people – you could understand how people in the silent movie days – enjoyed silent movies because that's all they had. They had nothing else to compare it to. But now that we've been to the talkies, going back is kind of weird. But not when you hear the music. And I'm just curious about how you learned to do that.
Well, I started out being interested in ragtime and jazz from that era. And I went to a jazz festival and I saw a jazz band accompany a short Buster Keaton film. And that's how I got the idea. Hey, this is something I can do with my very specialized skill set. And so I watched some silent movies and I got some DVDs that have scores from the late 20s, which are the way you would have heard them in the theater. Okay. And, you know, I read about how it was done and did some research. And then I got a portable DVD player and practiced a bit. And I cold called the Imagineon and I said, hey, let's do a silent movie, and I somehow talked him into it, and here we are.
So these are not necessarily, these movies are not scored. In other words, if you rent the movie, you don't get a sheaf of sheet music, and it says at this point in the film, play this song, right?
Well, the way it worked, 99% of the time, the musicians were on their own. There were a few exceptions. Mm-hmm. And basically, musicians would play with the best they could, the repertoire they had. You could get something called a thematic cue sheet,
uh-huh.
where it would suggest pieces to play at certain points in the movie, like what you were describing.
Mm-hmm.
But these were so consistently bad that people didn't really use them. They might have used the cues, they might have used the spots, and they would replace them with pieces they thought worked.
But you were choosing pieces of music that set the mood and also kind of told us what the actors were feeling and what we should feel. Exactly the way soundtracks in modern movies work, except we have the aid of dialogue. But it all has to happen at the right time. And as you were doing it, I was kind of watching you and watching the film, and you knew precisely when to change the mood, exactly when to shift gears. How?
Well, I'd seen the movie before, so that
okay.
helped. But I think now that I've been doing it for a while, I have lots of pieces in my repertoire that I can go to at the drop of a hat. So, you know, you've got the love scene. I've got love scene music. You've got, you know, the Indians attacking.
So give me some examples. Just play some things that you might play, and I'll try to figure out what's going on in the film at that point. Something sneaky. Something sneaky and subversive.
That's literally called burglar or sneaky music by a guy named J.S. Zamechnik, who wrote music that was just like generic to be used with any silent film you wanted.
Okay. Give me something else here. Well, that's obviously Snidely Whiplash going across the train tracks, running, chasing the hero down the train.
That's right. It's called Hurry Music, and then it says in parentheses, for struggles.
Okay. One more here before we run out of time. Obviously, the hero and the heroine have gotten together here, and
actually, it's called Goodbye Music.
Oh no!
For parting or love scene.
Oh well.
So very close.
Very close. Ethan Uslan is our guest. We're going to have him play some more ragtime piano, and some of which may surprise you when we come back in just a moment. And later on in the program, the cast of I Love Lucy live on stage. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Chesterbrook Academy preschools, preparing children academically, socially, and emotionally for elementary school in the Charlotte area. Hosting an open house tomorrow. Details at ChesterbrookPreschool.com. 10 years ago, almost to the day, Kannapolis was experiencing a dark and uncertain time. The historic Pilotex plant had shut down. Thousands of people were thrown out of work. But since then, Kannapolis has been going through a transformation. Slowed a bit during the recession, but it's now regaining traction. And the change is more than just the physical part made possible by the creation of the North Carolina Research Campus. It includes the impact of the research being done, which has way broader implications. We're going to find out more about all of this and the revival of a community Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, Amazon's Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post, Americans react to a worldwide terror threat, and defense attorneys say the Fort Hood shooter wants the death penalty.
Join the Diane Rehm Show for the News Roundup this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Lucille Ball is in the studio. We're going to talk to her in just a moment or two, along with the rest of the cast of I Love Lucy live on stage. They are at the Knight Theater through the 18th of August. And also, I believe, on the 18th of August, The Entertainer gets its Charlotte premiere. It's a documentary that features our guest this segment, Ethan Uslan, who is a ragtime pianist. He's been on this program before, and we've just taken you through some things that he does with silent films. But you have a piece that you've recorded and put on YouTube that's gotten 152,000 hits, I'm told, which kind of combines your classical training with what you've turned this piano profession into, ragtime. How did that come about?
Well, I noticed I get a good reaction when I turn classical pieces into jazz pieces. And I guess I like doing it. I like getting my revenge on hearing all those fur releases and, you know, making the composers roll over in their graves a little bit.
Well, let's have one. Is this Beethoven?
This is Beethoven.
Well, roll over, Beethoven. Here we go.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you, Desi.
You know, I think that Beethoven would like that. If only he could hear.
If only, yeah. Yeah. And we're alive.
Now, you. This is your arrangement, right?
Uh huh.
And I'm told that somebody, a Van Cliburn, a competitor, found this and has asked you for it.
Yeah, I sell it on. People kept asking me for the notes written down, you know, uh-huh. And that's really not usually the thing I do. But since I got so many people from the internet asking me, I did, and I sell it for my website, and I seem to be they sell pretty well, and interesting people from around the world seem to be buying them, and this former Van Cliburn competitor named Roberto Plano, who is performing at the Chautauqua Music Festival, said he wants to play it as an encore for the for a Beethoven concerto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of cool. I get to experience that kind of vicariously.
Absolutely. Now, you have been a competitor in the World Championship Old-Time Piano Playing Contest, which is located every year, mm-hmm. I think, every year, in Peoria, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Why Peoria? Is that because if it plays in Peoria, it'll play anywhere?
No, they had a train museum, some kind of railway museum, and I don't even know if the museum exists anymore. Mm-hmm. And they had like a railroad day sometime in the mid-70s. And kind of as a side show, they said, oh, and we'll have a ragtime piano contest. And people came out for the ragtime piano contest. And each year it grew and grew. And it was just this small town thing that
blossomed.
And they didn't plan on that happening, but it did.
So now there's this documentary that they followed you as a finalist and several other finalists through the competition, which premieres at Tate Hall on August the 18th. Did you win that year, or can you tell us?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell you.
Because that you find out at the end of the movie. So, sorry.
So what was it like to have a camera crew following you around? Was it like being on Survivor?
I imagine it is. And now I don't watch reality shows, but if I did, I know how fake it is. Because you are self-conscious when there's a camera on you. You know that. And you might be, if you're the certain type of person, you might be inclined to ham it up for the camera.
And did you? Because you strike me as somebody who just might.
it could have happened a couple times.
Because Ethan, you can't see this, but Ethan is dressed as though it were 1890 this morning. He's got garters on his sleeves, a very nice polka dot tie, and what do you call that hat?
A newsboy cap?
A newsboy cap, yes. You're all dressed up for television, for radio. Denise and Charlotte couldn't hold, but he said she wanted to thank you, Ethan, for what you've been saying about music this morning, particularly what you talked about with regard to classical music. She's a classically trained violinist who just changed over to jazz and gypsy music, and so it's so important, she says, to let artists know that it's okay to find the music that speaks to them, not just to Chopin. Wonderful to hear a kindred spirit this morning.
Wow.
Talk about ragtime as a musical style, since it's so in your bones. What does it take to be a good ragtime pianist, besides a wide hand range, it seems to me, and a really good sense of rhythm and the ability to go on the left hand?
Well, I think you got to have a sense of humor, because there's something lighthearted about it. If you use pauses the right way, you can get a smile out of people and surprise people. And you have to not be afraid to be spontaneous. I guess that could be said about all music. You want to be spontaneous, but particularly in the music where you're improvising a bit.
So when you were listening to Scott Joplin and people like that, what were you hearing that intrigued you?
Well, I guess the beat. Coming from a piano background, I already could play piano. I said, wow, this is what piano's for. It's for, mm-hmm. for dancing, and it's for parties. I imagine that era was really the golden age of piano. Everybody was playing it. People were dancing to it. The piano player, much like in here, is the most popular guy in the room.
Right. Well, if you go see the Broadway musical Ragtime, Cole House Walker, one of the key characters in that play, is a ragtime piano player, and everybody loves Cole House because of the music that he plays. How did that music fit into the landscape of its time? What was it doing? How was it changing the music of its day?
Well, I guess it was seen as a bit scandalous. The kind of culture wars you have today about rap music and hip hop have been going on since ragtime. It was kind of frowned upon in many circles. It's not so devious today.
But it's very American, and it's African-American. I mean, mm-hmm. they made the significant contribution to this, although George Gershwin, who kind of brought jazz into classical music and wrote Porgy and Bess, which is about African-Americans in Charleston, also got involved in this. And you've done an arrangement of I've Got Rhythm that I'd like to hear this
Let's
morning
do it.
If you'll play it for us. My face hurts. I feel like I was watching I Love Lucy the other night. My face hurt when I left it. My face is hurting now. Everybody's got a big smile on their face. You're not even breaking a sweat.
I am, actually.
You haven't got headphones on, so Carl, who's called in, you can't hear Carl, but I know that he wants to ask the difference between ragtime and jazz, so maybe you could explain that very quickly.
Yeah, I think ragtime usually refers to the more, I'd say it's a bit more square style, and that lasted up until about 1920. So this is referred to as classic ragtime, and Scott Joplin is the big composer for that. And so around 1920, I think ragtime had become so popular that just the word ragtime had burnt out, and people started using the word jazz. And I think for a while they meant the same thing. And then the style changed. And so if you heard the Maple Leaf Rag in the 1920s, it would have had more of a swing to it, might have been a bit faster. Mm-hmm. So I'll play it again in more 1920 style. Thank you.
I get it.
So that's my mini lecture on ragtime versus jazz.
The Entertainers is the film that he's part of that gets its Charlotte premiere on August the 18th at Tate Hall. That's upstairs from Halton Auditorium on the campus of CPCC. And it's at 2 p.m. And he won't tell us whether he won the contest, the world, what's it called, the World Championship Old Time Piano Playing Contest. So you'll have to go to the movie to find out
exactly.
For yourself. I want to tell you that we had that piano specially detuned.
Thank you.
For this performance.
Thank you.
But thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Ethan Uslan, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Don't go away because I want you to help me get into this next segment. I'm going to start this next segment with a song that has been played every single day around the world for 62 years. If you were around, you heard that piece of music for the first time on October 15th, 1951, when one of the most successful shows in television history premiered. I Love Lucy has been on TV ever since, here and around the world, airing in dozens of languages every single day. For all those years, the show has been in black and white, thank you, and on film, but now you can see it live and in color at the Knight Theater. Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel are all there in I Love Lucy live on stage. Serena Irwin plays Lucy. Mendieta is Ricky. Kevin Remington is Fred. And Joanna Daniels is Ethel. And they're all here in our studio this morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you, Ethan. That was really amazing.
What a treat. Yeah. What a surprise and a treat.
Yeah.
I'm still getting my breath. I'm a huge Ragtime fan.
Yeah,
so
I was watching.
I was freaking out.
Yeah, you were getting emotional there.
Yeah, I really was. It was really, really amazing. Thank you.
That's the voice of Kevin Remington, who plays Ethel.
Boy, is he a good actor.
Watch it.
I know.
Who plays Fred
Mertz?
What is it about Ragtime?
For corn's sake.
We're all interchangeable.
What is it about Ragtime that turns you on so much?
I started out as a dancer, so it's the rhythm of it. And I just love the skill that it takes. It's an insane... takes an enormous amount of skill to do, so I love watching it being played, and I love just the rhythm and all the rhythmic permutations.
Well, I only have a minute left in this segment, and we'll come back and talk some more, but it strikes me that what you're doing, I know you're all accomplished actors, and you've done many, many other things in the course of your careers, but to recreate this iconic sitcom and recreate these characters strikes me as an incredible challenge.
Yes.
Yeah. Challenge and an honor. Yeah. We feel very privileged, to be entrusted with these roles and to carry on that torch of what the show did. So, and we have a lot of fun with that. And so that spirit carries through.
Well, I want to talk about that with each of you individually, because each of you bring something really special to this process, which I think is it's astounding how you do it. I mean, it really is. We're going to come back with Serena Irwin, Bill Mendieta, Kevin Remington, Joanna Daniels, Fred, Ethel, well, Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel in just a moment. Charlotte Talks. Got to give Lucy top billing. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and ExploreBooneArea.com, a summer escape with family, friends, and the cool breezes of the North Carolina high country where the average summer highs are 77 degrees. ExploreBooneArea.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, a panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. Amazon's Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post. Americans react to a worldwide terror threat, and defense attorneys say the Fort Hood shooter wants the death penalty. Those are just a few of the stories they'll be talking about. Of course, the International Hour at 11. When we come back, I Love Lucy, Don't We All? Live on stage. Well, there's your opportunity to enjoy it in a different way, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Tom Chester, General Manager of Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, a WFAE underwriter.
There's a lot of listeners, and it's a very high-quality type of programming, and we like being associated with that high-quality type of approach to news and information.
Underwriting on WFAE says a lot about your business. For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about I Love Lucy live on stage through the 18th at the Knight Theater down the street from where we are right now. Serena Irwin plays Lucy Ricardo and Lucille Ball. Bill Mendieta is Ricky Ricardo and Desi Arnaz. Kevin Remington is Fred Mertz, William Frawley. And Joanna Daniels is Ethel Mertz, Vivian Vance. All of you are astounding at recreating these people. These are not imitations or impersonations. How would you characterize what you're doing? Because you have recreated the you walk out and you are those people.
I think that for, I'm guessing for all of us, of course I can only speak for myself, but I was looking to capture the essence of Lucy Ricardo and to really bring her to life, to bring all the little nuances of what she did in there, but also knowing that I was going to be bringing myself along with it.
And you were in a show with somebody who worked very closely and for a long time with Lucille Ball, correct?
Yes, I actually worked with Paula Stewart in an acting class that was a class for professionals, and she and I became fast friends, and she had been in Wildcat with Lucy on Broadway and played Lucy's younger sister. And yeah, she and I became friends, and she said, you know, have you seen much I Love Lucy? I said, no, I haven't. Shame on me, but no. And she said,
she grew up without a TV.
I did, in my defense. But then I was deep into my adulthood before I ever had the opportunity.
It's amazing to me that somebody has not seen I Love Lucy until they got the part.
Let's say I had seen a few episodes, but I didn't have any. I knew her image. I knew a general idea of who she was, but I didn't have anything concrete or based in any truth, as it turns out.
So you did some binge watching.
Indeed. Yeah.
You bought the boxed set of I Love
Lucy. I did. I did, and yes.
Yeah. But none of you are, and you're not doing, I don't know how to explain this to people who have not seen the show yet, but you're not doing impersonations. You're not like a Rich Little characters out there.
No.
You are acting, but you are recreating two episodes of this show, and I watched one of them before I came to see your show, and you have recreated it right down to where you're on the stage. I mean, everything is exactly the way it was on the television show.
Which one did you watch?
The first one that you do, which is
The Benefit.
The Benefit. Yeah.
The Benefit. And I know that you moved one scene from the bedroom to the living room because you don't have
No bedroom.
Right. There's some liberties we had to take with being in theater. And there's some also little subtle things that you may catch that, that wasn't in the episode. We changed a couple of things there.
Yeah, but for the most part, you are recreating this, but you're also taking the audience back to it wasn't taped then, a filming of two episodes of I Love Lucy. So it's all the stuff going around the filming. And then you guys are coming on and off, in and out of character. How do you capture Ethel? Ethel, it seems to me to be difficult. I mean, obviously, Lucy, you have to be dead on it or you're dead meat.
Right.
Yes.
That's funny you should say that, because
that's the motivation
there. That's what motivated me initially. I don't want to be killed for this.
But Ethel, by design, was kind of the girl next door, not to overshadow Lucy.
Uh-huh.
But you have captured her voice.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's Ethel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a pleasure, and I did grow up watching reruns of I Love Lucy, and it's funny because I always focused on Lucy. Lucy was always the one, you know, she's the more obvious of the two, and to me it was like,
hey.
But now being cast as Ethel, you know, I watch it with a different eye, and what a joy she is and how much she brings, and all of them, actually. It's such an ensemble show, and having a more mature eye, I guess, and watching it now, I see all of the subtle things that they all brought to it and how valuable they were as a group. And
how really good actors they all individually were.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. I mean, they really had that fabulous timing and, yeah. and a mm-hmm. sense of listening and working together because they only had a week to put these things on their feet.
Yeah,
I know. That's the amazing thing. That's,
yeah.
Here we've been living with this, you know, some of us for years, and it never gets tiring. There's always something interesting. Mm. There's something more, and I just am always excited by
it. It's bottomless.
Yeah.
It really is.
Really?
Yeah. I think so. I'm new to the group, so I joined the tour when we went out, and so initially I was like, oh, you know, because the three of them have done it for a while, and I thought, oh, God, I've got to catch up, but... They've been amazing people to work with. But it is bottomless. If you like, every time we go out there to do the show, there's one new thing, and I go, oh, yeah, you know. Mm. And you have to keep it within the context of you know, what sort of works. But it really feels bottomless.
Well, when you are trying to recreate what we saw on television, and many people are not going to remember these specific episodes, but
right.
we do remember the characters and how they mm-hmm. interact. Yeah. But when you're trying to recreate that, how much leeway do you have? How much can you change night to night? How much can you react? You get an idea as an actor because of something that just happened, and you want to react to that and make it real, but you also need to stick to the essence of I Love Lucy.
Yeah, well, that's the joy of doing theater, because it is different each night, and that audience really informs it. The audience is that other character that's really necessary for it, and that changes a lot of timing, and some things happen. I remember one time somebody's had a clip-on bow tie. It flew out on the stage. We had to deal with it.
Yeah.
So we had to deal with it as Lucy and Ricky and Fred and Ethel. There was another time the lights came out. So that it gave a good opportunity to rib Fred. Hey, Fred, what about the
right?
Lights?
Yeah,
now, pay the bill.
But now, right. because each of these characters were on TV for so long, everybody has moments that they remember. We all remember Ricky singing "Babaloo," which you do, and I got to tell you, you sing infinitely better than Desi Arnaz. and then, of course, there are these crying jags that Lucy engaged in from time to time to manipulate Ricky. And we have an example of that from The Benefit, which you are performing. But this is actually from the original show.
What did you say?
I said, I'll just tell Ethel that we can't make it.
What do you mean, we?
Well, for your information, Ethel asked me to appear at that benefit, too. I thought perhaps we could sing a duet together.
Oh, no.
Oh, Ricky, wouldn't you do it for me?
No.
But I can't.
No.
No.
No. Lucy, I am not going to appear at that benefit. Do you understand? And I don't want to hear another word about it, right?
I don't
want to
hear another word about it, all right?
That's better.
That's better. Lucy.
Ah.
All right, honey. All right. I'll do it with you.
You will.
She was so transparently manipulative.
You think?
Nothing subtle about it.
Really.
But it worked every time. Now, you don't look. I've been looking at you, and I watched you while Ethan was playing piano, Kevin. And you don't look like William Frawley in real life. But by gosh, on stage, you are Fred Mertz. You look
you.
Just like him. What's
Thank
the
you.
What's the secret to becoming
a
him?
A lot of makeup and a shaved head.
Oh, that's a sacrifice you
No,
have to make.
I mean, you know, it was the last thing the casting director ran out and asked me when I did my callback. Will you shave your head? I was like, yes. Yeah, I mean, thankfully, at my age, I still have most of my hair, so I had to shave a lot of it off. But it started with his voice. His voice is so distinctive. And his physicality. Mm-hmm. His physicality is minimal, but, like, he doesn't waste any energy on anything. Like, he doesn't do it. He literally, sometimes you watch him, and he looks like he's just waiting for his line. And he's in neutral. And then when he says his line, he guns it all the way to the floor, and then he pulls it. So it's just that rhythm of him. He had a vaudevillian rhythm. And mm-hmm. He really, the more I watched him and the more I read about him, he really is playing himself. He really is a cranky, cheapskate, old.
Well, he lived through the Great Depression.
Yeah, well, he lived before that. He was born in 1887. So, I mean,
wow.
He lived through, you know, he's a 19th century man.
you know. You know, people don't understand vaudeville today. And vaudeville in early television, certainly in radio, but and this show came from radio and into mm-hmm. television. Those skills that those performers had because of doing the 8 shows a week or 8 shows a day in some cases
yeah.
on vaudeville really, really created what we think of as sitcoms. I mean, they used all those skills to create these new forms of entertainment.
Yeah.
And they are different. The shows today are different. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that the audience has to get used to when they go back and see this live. The rhythms are different.
Yeah.
There was more time to develop, to set it up and knock it down.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we spent a lot of time with our director, Rick Sparks, on the rhythm of this show, because the rhythm is everything. And you had asked something previously about, you know, what kind of liberties can you take in mm-hmm. the moment? And you can if something crazy like a bow tie pops off and et cetera.
Right.
But, and you should. I mean, you have to yeah. acknowledge that you're there and it's happening. But the one thing that would really throw this show off would be if you stopped with the rhythms. And the rhythms, I think, because they've been in the background of the subconscious of so many who have been watching this show for so long, mm-hmm. even for those that just have it on the TV and walk away and do cooking or do whatever they're up to, it's that rhythm that we're connected to that feels like the show. And Rick Sparks sat us down the very first day of rehearsal and said, if we don't get this rhythm, we're sunk. So let's listen to the rhythm of this. Mm-hmm. And well, that goes back to Ethan too with the piano. That's what makes it.
And it comes from that vaudeville, the setup, the payoff.
Yeah.
The setup, payoff, all that classic comedy, which in my opinion, audiences respond to that rhythmically, and yet we can enhance it with our characterizations and with the staging and all.
And you have that song and dance at the end of the benefit, that Lucy and Ricky have the song and dance at the end of that, which is a strictly right out of vaudeville,
exactly.
in one kind
yes.
of thing, with
yeah.
jokes in between the verses of the song. That is just a joy to watch because you just don't see it anymore.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Think Carol Burnett
yeah.
and beyond.
Right.
That's what you don't see anymore. And you watch this and you think, damn, that's good.
It's so much fun to do, as you can,
yeah.
as you can imagine. But Bamboo Tree, the old classic number, and I think I believe that Lucy and Desi, Lucille and Desi, took that on the road, and that was a part of their vaudeville.
Yeah, there was. Show.
And then in the second show that you do, Fred and Ethel get to do something similar to that, the Varsity Drag.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really were singers and dancers
yes.
from their earlier lives.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like each other off camera. Do you know that?
Well, Joanna and I have some theories about that.
Well, they didn't
think it was lore. Well, just to look at them and to study them and see how much they love what they're doing. We just, I don't know, we sort of feel like, you know, everybody loves to hear negative stories
yeah.
and dirt. And I'm sure it was grounded in truth, but I feel like, and after reading biographies and stuff, I feel like a lot of it was, you know, tongue in cheek, and that's the way they behaved.
Yeah, and it also helped the two characters because
right.
he's always gigging her.
Well, yeah, but yeah. you know, but at the same time, if you look, I just saw a photo the other day that I was like, more evidence to support me and Joanna's theory. When he called her Honey Bunch uh-huh. on the show, uh-huh. I mean, it was 100% sincere, and I just saw a really great picture of them kissing. And I was, you know, and the way that people talk about it, you'd think, you know,
that's
Vance
not,
would have been throwing up or whatever, but
that wasn't.
They made a lot of jokes. I think that was their relationship was negative and like one-liners towards each other, and you know,
and that was reflective of the Fred and Ethel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're always ribbing each other.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just reading things into this because I know a little bit about the show, I Love Lucy. Desi Arnaz was the real brains behind the show, although Lucy had to fight to get him on the show. He helped invent what is now the sitcom, the way sitcoms
are done. He did invent it.
That multi-camera shoot with a live audience, they did that because they wanted to have production in Los Angeles as opposed to New York, and so they can keep their family together.
Yeah. And there's one moment in the show where they're doing an over the shoulder cutaway, which will be edited in, which is explained by the MC.
Yeah.
But you're in the background behind the camera kind of directing it, as Desi Arnaz might have done because he created this.
Yeah, we're able, in between the scenes there, we're able to give those suggestions of how this might have happened. And as a producer, you know, they have a director there, but he's still the producer would give tell them what to do or give the overriding direction for the scene.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a tiny moment in the show where he goes off stage with an assistant, a female assistant.
Oh, you have a good eye. Those are subtle things.
You give him a lingering look like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right.
Because he was known to be a womanizer.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, this show is...
I was just doing that. What are you talking about?
Busted.
Hey.
People don't know this, but there are lyrics to the theme song of I Love Lucy, and I want people to hear them this morning.
I love Lucy and she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. Sometimes we quarrel, but then how we love making up again. Lucy kisses like no one can. She's my missus and I'm her man. And life is heaven, you see.
You will hear Bill Mendieta sing that in the show, and he will sing it on key. Karina Irwin is Lucy Ricardo. Kevin Remington is Fred Mertz. And Joanna Daniels is Ethel Mertz. I'm all choked up. I Love Lucy live on stage at the Knight Theater through the 18th. Thank you for a great show and fun times.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. This was great.